All right, good morning. You are listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.fm. And I'm Leah, and I'm here with Jess. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Leah.
How are you?
I'm good. How was your Christmas?
It was delightful. How was yours?
It was great. I did a lot of yoga.
Yeah, yeah. I got two bags of cold this year. but that was We've Killed More for Less by Motel Beds. And we started our show off with this because we're going to kill you all next year. No. because that was Jess's most played song of the decade, right? Yeah,
at least according to my iTunes library. I guess I haven't been listening.
Does it feel right to you, though?
I know I've listened to that song a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that song. Motel Beds. Might not even be a band anymore. Don't know. But well, check out Mind Glitter. It's one of my favorite records of the decade.
All right. Yeah. So today, after the runaway success of me crying through our top five last week, we decided to do the top 10 of the decade. It's daunting, you guys. It's tough. Heavy as the head that we're being... having to choose between all my beautiful babies was an extraordinarily hard task, and I still don't have my list all the way set, so you guys are hearing this in real time.
Yeah, there might be some real-time changes. Do you want to talk at all about, like, your criteria or how you made decisions or...
Yeah. So the decade, obviously, was 2010 to... the end of 2019.
Yeah. Got that part.
So that disqualified anything that aired before then. So I...
Including things that started before then?
Yep.
We should have...
I was
we
just...
We should have discussed this.
Oh, sorry. I was just ranking based on if there was... So yeah, I disqualified anything that started before then.
I did not.
I only... Well, no, I didn't disqualify it. That's not true. But I only ranked it on... any seasons that aired after 2010.
Okay.
So I don't know if
you take
you
my
think,
headphones down just a little bit.
Sure. If you think that is enough.
I didn't have hard and fast rules, but I did like try to weigh things that, you know, at least the bulk of it took place this decade. Shows that were like one-offs, you know, obviously if it didn't have more than one strong season, it is not a contender against something like whatever. I don't know. Like,
see,
some of my favorite, like, this is one didn't make my list, but Party Down, 2009 to 2010.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows.
Second season aired in 2010.
My
honorable mentions.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fucking great show,
see,
but can
munchies.
Something like, you know, one great season this decade compete with, I mean, everyone fucking knows.
This is your list. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to say, like, there are some oddities on my list. I have broken my own rules, but I think for good reasons. But
yeah.
Anyway, we should get into it.
Yeah,
Oh, my God. I don't know about my list at all.
No, I know. Now I'm looking at it, I'm like, that's stupid. That's stupid, too. Why did I choose? That was so dumb. You're so dumb. You shouldn't be able to. It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's also... my biggest disclaimer is I'm like, I have probably forgotten more TV that I enjoyed than I, you know, it. Anything that I omitted that you guys are irate about, it's probably because I didn't watch it. I have not seen The Wire. I don't even know if that aired
that
in this
ended
decade.
Long before this
okay,
decade.
Good. Well, that's
I believe,
good.
At least close.
That's good. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
You can stop feeling guilty.
Never
about
saw
the Wire
All in the Family. That didn't make my list. but
you guys, next week we're going to do Best TV of the Century, our top 100 shows.
They're all Hallmark movies, spoiler. I think it's that was one of my things is I'm like, I don't know, is it fair to rank a show that has had two seasons against a show that's had seven? And
yeah.
Yes, it's about what you enjoyed. It's
I guess
your
I
top
gave
shows.
Something, if it was a show that was more brief or only had a couple great seasons, if it did something more innovative or creative or boundary breaking.
Or
then,
meant something to you. Or,
yeah. Than a more traditional show, then maybe I'd give it some imaginary points in a ranking I definitely did not do scientifically.
Yeah, but I think that's in talking or in thinking about this for me, I think that's the thing. Like 10 years is a long time to think about TV and what you've enjoyed. And I very unscientifically ranked a lot of mine from like a feeling that I have about how I felt watching these shows, which, you know, that's, I don't remember every single episode of every show that made it to my list, but overall, as like a body of work, these are things that I enjoyed and that meant something to me or did something different or whatever, and that's kind of how they ended up here.
Yeah.
Okay, so with all that said, yeah, what's your number 10, Jess?
My number 10 is Catastrophe, the Shar Horgan, Rob Delaney show, which we've talked about several times. It had four great seasons. I thought it was really strong throughout. And yeah, it just felt fresh and exciting to watch. It was like a marriage story that was very different. For a relationship drama, it just kind of upended a lot of like TV cliches. They fought about things that you weren't expecting, and they didn't fight about things that you would have expected them to fight about. And it was incredibly funny. Such a great, compact, you know, 24 short episodes that really told a beautiful story.
Yeah, I loved it. Huge fan. Yeah, that's a great pick. You're starting us off really strong.
Okay. I'm also, we had a lot of overlap for our top five of 2019. I'm curious to see how much overlap there is for our top 10 of the decade.
We'll see.
You don't have much of a poker face, by
Okay, so
you're number 10.
Speaking of rules, I'm going to go ahead and break one right off the biting. Bat. My number 10 was Parenthood seasons.
Okay.
1 through 5. It aired in 2010 through 2015. And I also lumped in Under the Wire, FNL season 5, which aired in 2010. The reason I combined those two is because they're both
cheating
Jason Kadam's shows. That, look, Friday Night Lights is one of the favorite things that I have ever watched. I loved that show. Tammy Taylor, y'all. Coach Taylor, forever the coach of my heart. All those quarterbacks. Why Tim Riggins doesn't have like a thriving career is beyond me. But Parenthood was the NBA, it aired on NBC,
I think so.
Ensemble dramedy about the Braverman clan, and it was one of those shows that I was so excited to watch every week. I cried almost every episode, and I think it was a precursor to shows like This Is Us that now I feel like have a more manipulative hook, like try more gimmicky stuff to hook you with like emotional stuff. And I think that, look, Parenthood was not breaking any like huge ground. They weren't like covering, you know, I don't know. It was just this very nice feeling show about like this upper middle class family who like in California, you know, it was very utopian, but it was really soothing. And it was a very beautiful like portrayal of, you know, the, I don't know, the hard things about living close to your family and being close to your family and working with your family and all of that. And yeah, I really loved it. I thought it was very soothing. So
I have not watched 1 minute of that show, so apologies for not having any input.
But. No, that's fine. I don't know that it'd be for you. I think that I think one of the things that I enjoyed, sorry, that's just me moving the chair around. I think one of the things that I enjoyed about it is that it was this sort of like emotional release, this cathartic emotional release for me every week to watch these people be like nice to each other, and yet it's all fairly low stakes. I tried to watch This Is Us, and I was like, oh, I think the world has changed in a way that this feels like too contrived, pushing for emotion now in a way that I didn't feel with Parenthood. And it may just be that it was pre the 2016 election.
Well, now we have Hallmark movies for that space.
So Parenthood made it for me.
My number 9 is High Maintenance, which I struggled with a little bit, but I was really blown away by that show's kind of creating its own genre. It started as a short on Vimeo, and the episodes were like 5 to 8 minutes long, and it has this device where it's about a drug dealer who like enters another person's life each episode, and it's just these short little vignettes about different characters every episode. And it's just like so emotionally impactful the way each story is so great, and mm-hmm. it's amazing the economy of storytelling, and it has this magical like gauziness to it. It makes New York look really beautiful, mm-hmm. which I'm always such a sucker for. And then it was picked up by HBO and turned into a 30-minute series, and it has evolved over time. The guy who mm-hmm. is the drug dealer has it's kind of come into focus around him when it initially wasn't. And I just think it's a really interesting storytelling experience, and yeah. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's really, really, it's like a beautiful show mm-hmm. in the way that it shows just like these human connections. It's really, and yeah, I love that it has changed to be more about a focus sort of on the guy.
It's interesting. It's like you don't see television evolve in that way, the way this show has had an arc.
It's also the personal arc was that they, Katia Blickfield and Ben Simmons, is it Simmons? I can't remember his name, but Ben, whatever his name is, were married when they started mm-hmm. the show, and they got divorced between season 1 and 2, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was worried they expanded the writer's room and brought in new people. And I think that like having that expand kind of the world was done really flawlessly, and I think he has this like unbelievably gentle, charismatic energy that's like very easy to spend time with. It's beautiful. I'm a big fan.
So you're number 9, right?
Okay. So my number 9 was Girls, aired from 2012 to 2017. Lena Dunham, as we all know, is, I don't know, problematic in many ways. I feel like she's young, she's outspoken, she's extraordinarily privileged. She's mm-hmm. She's got a singular voice that's really impressive to me. I feel like for all the flaws and all the complaints that you can make about Girls, it gave us Adam Driver, which we as a nation need now more than ever. And also, I think she did have something to say.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, like these people were terrible, and she was self-involved and selfish and all these things. But it was different. It like changed the way female friendships were portrayed. It mm-hmm. changed it. I don't even want to invoke in Sex and the City. Voice. Yeah, like I don't.
Couldn't vote. The show itself invoked Sex and the City off the bat. That show very much loomed over Girls.
But it's just, I feel like she did some really, really interesting things. I felt like the last season was super strong. I mean, I love seeing Riz Ahmed on my screen, and mm-hmm. he made a like powerful, important contribution to the show, and
it's a hilarious way of putting it.
But I just, I think that Lena Dunham, I think the episode with Matthew Rhys
mm-hmm.
had some like important things to say. I think she was young. She was touted as this like wunderkind, and I don't know what that does to a person. But I think that, I don't know, there's a lot of toxicity surrounding her, and
she's a chaotic young woman.
Yeah. It's she's okay. Yeah. And it is. And I think that's the big thing, is like, it's okay. Like, who gets to say what's art or what's important? And, for all that show has been think pieced all over, like about body image and women and all of that. And
At this point, I think
it's had an impact.
It's hard to remember how shocking it was to see a naked woman's body on television
and uncomfortable sex scenes.
Now that's a little bit more normal, but I think we forget that Lena Dunham kind of broke ground in mm-hmm. that like the first time you saw a naked body that wasn't like fetishized and mm-hmm. like perfect and beautiful was it was kind of a big deal. I don't know what that noise is. Let's ignore it.
I don't either.
My number seven.
Nine.
Is that where we're at?
Nine.
my nine was high maintenance. I'm on eight, I guess.
Okay, eight.
Counting is not my strong suit.
Okay.
But speaking of counting, the only network sitcom, if not the only network show to appear on my list is 30 Rock.
Oh.
I think that was mostly this decade.
Oh.
I think our brains don't go to network sitcoms yes. when we think about iconic shows of the decade, but 30 Rock was insanely funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have to even explain this. Anyone who's seen it knows the show is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Alec Baldwin was just revelatory.
Yeah.
Tina Fey is so funny. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I could just sit here and repeat 30 Rock jokes, but like, I think, like Beyonce, we forget how much she has given us the culture and the way we speak. I mm-hmm. think 30 Rock is also up there. Like most of the jokes that you're saying are just from 30 Rock.
Yeah, I think so. That's true.
And I think it's sort of maybe ushered out the era of like great network sitcoms. Like no shade on The Good Place. I know everyone likes that show. But that and Parks and Rec, I think, were some of the last like great network shows that we had.
Yeah, I did a lot of reading of best of lists for this, mm-hmm. and on multiple lists, I've seen Superstore listed, which
That's
is
so
currently
funny.
Running
I've
on ABC.
That.
I've never watched it either, which is mildly surprising to me because it has Ben Feldman.
I know.
And it
same.
Has America Ferrara.
Yeah.
Two people I'm as invested as I can be in anyone.
Yeah. Well, Ben Feldman's someone who, after Mad Men, I was like, can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah.
And then never watched
it. Apparently, I can. Apparently, I can. But yeah, people rave about shows like that. And I think that's one of the things is like streaming services. And I guess HBO really did start all this with, you know, serial shows that became sort of appointment TV. Mm-hmm. But streaming services have now really changed the way, I mean, even from the start of the decade, the way that, like, I watch and think about things.
Yeah.
And, yeah, things that, I mean, Parenthood is a perfect example. I used to watch that every Tuesday night yeah. at 10 p.m. And, you know, that seems crazy to me now to like think about waiting week to week.
Yeah.
And HBO is one of the only channels that I will do that for.
Yeah. But you have the option not to also.
Yeah. Then you can just store it up and yeah. accept everything will be ruined for you online. God damn it. but yeah, I think it's interesting. I didn't think about any like
really
sitcoms really for my best of, and yeah, that's probably
it
stuff that I enjoyed.
Not to get off track, but it was hard for me. I almost included The Office
mm-hmm.
because that show has truly given me so much joy. Mm-hmm. It's really, I think, even like I didn't, because I think its strongest seasons were in the last decade and not
yeah.
the ones that were the latter part of the series. But even those episodes, like after Michael Scott left, I still like watch them sometimes when they're on in syndication.
Yeah.
And they're so fucking funny.
Idris Elba was on
yeah,
that show.
I know.
Idris goddamn Elba.
It was an amazing the evolution of BJ Novak's show. Character over the course
yeah.
of the show was hilarious in itself.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
But yeah.
Anyway, sorry, Office, you didn't make the list. Even though I love you more than anything.
Honorable mention
yeah.
to the latter part of The Office. Okay, right. So that was number eight.
Yeah. So you're okay. number eight.
Okay, wait, let me review my list here and see. Let's
revisions.
Just edit some stuff here. okay, I... Oh, God, it's so hard. It's so hard. Okay, I am going to have to... I don't know. I got to drop someone.
Come on,
I don't know
Mia.
Who it's going to be. Okay, I'm going for it. I'm picking Succession as my number eight. Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Succession was number two on my top five mm-hmm. for 20 whatever year 2019 whatever year we're in, and I just think that it has been a while since I've been as like captivated by a show, and I yeah, I just, I love what they're doing with that show. Mm-hmm. I deeply, all the same things I said. I mean, it's amazing that a show about these reprehensible assholes can make me feel so much for them. And yeah, at the same time, it's really made me realize my dream of wanting a mega yacht.
For some reason, the shows that I, like the breakout shows of the last couple years, I don't know why, but I didn't include them. I mm-hmm. considered Succession. Mm-hmm. Spoilers, I didn't include Russian Doll either, which was my favorite show of the year. But I think maybe just the feeling that like there's more to see.
With, yeah.
See where these shows go. But yeah, I don't know why.
Okay.
Okay. My number seven is OJ Made in America.
Okay.
The ESPN documentary from a couple years ago.
Yep.
Which was hard because it was, you know, just a single body of work. I don't know. What was it?
It's part of the ESPN 30 for 30 series. So
I'm not including that whole thing. Yeah. Although the Tonya Harding episode was interesting too. but I just thought that documentary was such an incredible look at a moment in history that I think for people like our age who are kind of young when that whole happened, it's sort of like reduced into these iconic moments that become a little bit meaningless. Mm-hmm. And that show reminded me of so much that I'd forgotten about and contextualized so many moments and then put the OJ thing into a much larger context of racism and police violence in Los Angeles and what was going on at the time, and OJ Simpson's whole life, which I had never considered, about how he, you know, specifically strove to be a star and not a black star.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was an incredible story, and everyone should watch it. It's truly an education
about
racism in America.
I said when I think that was both of our number one shows the year that it aired, which was 2016, and I said that it should be taught in schools, and I absolutely believe that. I feel like I learned so much from OJ Made in America. It did not make my list because it was just a standalone thing, but it's on my honorable mentions, if that helps you in any way. OJ Made in America, all the things that you said, I think it's like important. I think it was just this like amazingly like rich and contextualized history of America leading up to how this event captured the world, really. I mean, the OJ chase was something that my mom in Ireland stayed up to like, you know, 2 a.m. watching, like the live feed, and it was really, really amazing. It was some powerful TV. That's an excellent pick. Okay, what number are we on here?
You're number six. Seven.
Okay.
I put my list in from 1 to 10, and now I'm having real trouble reading it bottom to top.
Well, I put in 12, so I'm like making edits as I go. But I think I'm pretty set from here on out. Okay. I had some tough cuts to make around the bottom, but now I think I'm pretty good. My number seven is a show that I don't think you've watched all of, but The Leftovers, which aired from 2014 to 2017. That show was really, really hard for me to ever get a full grasp on. Mm-hmm. It constantly sort of kept you at a distance because it dealt with like grief and loss and sadness in a way that felt very like isolating to me. It's based on a Tom Perrotta novel, and it's about 2% of the world just disappears. Mm-hmm. And it's about everybody who's left. And there's three seasons that are all distinct. This is a show that starts off in like suburban New Jersey and ends up in like the Australian outback at the end of season three. And Justin Theroux was outstanding as this like heartbroken, just like wrecked man who has lost everything and is trying to I don't know, how do you go about your normal life when this big, like, catastrophic thing has happened? And the second season moves to Texas, and the third season is in the outback, and it's weird, and it's really innovative. Like, there's a whole scene where Justin Theroux is a spy, like a spy assassin, and a whole episode, rather, and it just constantly kept me hooked, and I could never get a full beat on it. And then the third season just was so beautiful about, like, human connection and, like, legacy and what you remember and what's important, and just, I don't know, it just, it's really, really beautiful. And I don't know how much of it to attribute to Justin Theroux's Labrador eyelashes and and anything, but Carrie Coons was outstanding in that, just really, really affecting, and Amy Brenneman's great in it. The whole cast is really good, and Regina King was in season two, and it's really good. Can't recommend it.
Yeah, I haven't watched that at all. I need to get on that.
And you'll never go back. I'll never go back.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know why not. Like, I don't want to go down that road, but it's weird how it's just like, well, can't watch it now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Even though I do, in fact, still pay for Showtime and never watch anything on it.
That was on HBO, actually.
Oh, okay. Well,
The Leftovers.
You pay for that. Yeah. Still have your password.
Please watch The Leftovers on my dime. I'm happy for you to do so.
Okay, so we're on number six. My number six is Better Call Saul, which I am just constantly blown away by. Obviously, a spinoff of Breaking Bad. It's different tonally than Breaking Bad. It's a much more, you know, quiet show. But Bob Odenkirk just crushes it. I am just blown away by him. Rhea Seehorn.
Mike Ehrmantraut.
It's interesting because obviously you know some things about where some of these characters end up because it takes place before the action of Breaking Bad. But the way they use that in the plotting is really interesting. It's just beautiful. Like, I think Albuquerque, whether or not it's bleak, it's both bleak in this universe and beautiful. Like, the number of conversations that take place in a parking garage and the way that it's lit and the shadows fall on the characters. It's great. I love it so much. His relationship with his brother is extremely fraught and sad. And I don't know. It's great.
Yeah. I am one of those people who I absolutely see, like, how great that show is, but I had to stop watching after the first season.
Yeah.
The, like, overwhelming sadness that I felt watching that, like, character who I loved in Breaking Bad have this, like, have before he became Saul Goodman, just, like, truly was so affecting. And I think that's, like, the genius of Vince Gilligan, right?
Yeah.
Is that, like, he creates these deeply, deeply imagined worlds where, like, it feels so real. And it felt, like, hard and painful to me to continue to watch Better Call Saul. So I haven't.
Fair enough. It does have, like, an amount of joy to it.
Yeah.
Like, his character is a schemer, and you really feel the joy because he's so good at it.
Yeah.
And, like, the little scams that he comes up with and the hustles are so fun. And, like, you can see how – I can't remember Rhea Seehorn's character's name now. But, like, you know, she knows better than to get dragged down by him. But you can tell that she wants to go on that journey with him because it's just fucking more fun than being a normal lawyer.
Yeah, Bob Odenkirk is truly outstanding in that role. He's really, really great at it. Okay.
All right.
Awesome. What are we on six?
You're six, I believe,
Okay. My number six is Catastrophe, which aired from 2015 to 2019. I really, really loved the show. For all the reasons you've mentioned, like, dopey, her suit, Rob Delaney, like, just that beefy physicality.
Wait, he uses so well.
But, yeah, like, and Sharon Horgan
in his underwear.
Yeah, and Sharon Horgan's just so like cutting and Irish. Deeply, deeply relatable. And her brother Fergal was a joy, and Carrie Fisher and like the send off, and just like you said, they fight about things you wouldn't expect them to fight about, and yet there's like not manufactured drama. Like it's these adults trying to figure out how to deal with these situations that happen. It's like trying to make their way through life,
and that was the log line for the show.
I just think what they did, it felt too soon for them to be done, and yet they're what else am I going to see of their world? Like, this is their dynamic, this is who they are, like they're in it together, they like recommit to each other over and over. It's really funny. It's just it just really apparently did a great job. Excuse me, Siri,
what the fuck was that? Was that Siri?
I don't know, it wasn't on my phone.
The robots are coming. How appropriate to end with robots invading our show in the decade that we essentially opted into Skynet. So
it's been fun, guys. Siri really throwing shade on me saying it's really funny, and then she said apparently. I just really loved it. I really, really loved that show. I look forward to it coming back every year. Mm-hmm. And again, one of those shows that just like short seasons, short episodes, and yet like filled with such life, and really like embodied these characters. And Sharon Horgan's an insane wardrobe, and their beautiful house in London, and all of their messed up friends. It was so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love those people.
All right. My number five is Transparent.
Okay.
Which, I mean, we talked about Transparent a lot, I think maybe two or three times. And I just thought that show was so fresh and interesting. I know that several different parts of it have become problematic now, but I don't think that affects what a great story it was. Focusing on Maura's character, who transitions to be a woman later in life, but then kind of pans backwards into this larger story about her family and how it affects everyone. It reminded me of the greatness of TV's Judith Light.
Yes.
Another show about like entitled, you know, Los Angeles people who are kind of self-centered and awful, and yet it's still like you still feel their, I don't know, like how they got to be so messed
fucking
up.
Josh.
Fucking Josh. Why am I forgetting that Duplass brother's name?
The one that's not Mark.
Not Mark Duplass.
Yes.
I must be really having a stroke. But
what is
like
his
character's fucking loathsome. And yet you feel so fucking bad for him. And I think so
drawn to him. Like you would absolutely have ill-advised sex with fucking Josh. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, the story was interesting and not kind of TV convention. It was great. And I thought each season really built on it. I especially love the second season, where there's this sort of unseen character that dies in the Holocaust, played by Hari Neff, who is the trans, I guess, aunt that they never even knew existed. And it was a great, like, that true, like, unbelievable trauma looming over their sort of like petty nonsense trauma. For the most part, they are traumatized characters, but a lot of their problems are stupid. I just thought that was so beautiful and such a great way to contextualize their, you know, overprivileged nonsense lives.
Awesome. My number five is Transparent. I for all the reasons you said, I thought that Judith Light was truly an absolute revelation. Michelle. It's also interesting. I don't know. I have not watched season five, the musicale finale.
I haven't either, actually.
And it's interesting because this show was so moving to me. Like, I think it was season four where they went to Israel with Maura's dad's side of the family.
Yeah.
And I thought, it explores the way it does contextualize, like, how messed up these people are with, like, these large, large historical issues, and, like, even, like, epigenetics and inherited trauma, and, like, the things that like all these characters are searching for that have parallels all the way back through their family was just really, really beautiful and just, yeah, like amazing. That cruise they all went on. Jennifer Hahn was in it as Catherine Hahn, sorry, as a rabbi, yeah. And she was amazing. And yeah, I loved so much about that show. And it's again very telling that, you know, season 5, the one without Maura, who frankly I could have done without Maura for much of Transparent, yeah. But I think that it's interesting that in 2019 I haven't even watched that yet.
I know, yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah, something that is like my number 5 of the decade. I haven't even completed it. So maybe I should do that.
Yeah, I definitely need to watch that. All right, my number 4. Are we doing okay on time?
We are doing okay on time. Okay. 37, so.
Okay, move it along.
Yeah.
Well, my number 4 is Girls, which we already talked about. Excellent. So we don't have to dwell on it anymore. But I sometimes rewatch the first season of that show and I'm just mind blown by how many moments are so funny or shocking. I come back all the time to Adam Driver existing only in Hannah's bedroom for most of the first season until we see him out at a party. And this is dumb. I'm just repeating jokes. But when she says, "That's Adam," and Jessica goes, "He does look like the original man."
Yeah.
It's just, the writing's incredible.
Yeah.
It gave me Andrew Rannells, who is just a beam of fucking sunshine.
Sorry, I'm touching you with my pizza hand.
And yeah, the characters are all kind of like loathsome assholes, but then you I don't know. I felt.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you want to be friends with Marnie by the end of Girls?
No, she's a fucking monster. Yeah. But I don't know. I get why you'd be drawn to her. Yeah, just a great show.
She's a
beautiful
wasp.
Yeah. It did like introduce a new voice, and I think it changed television.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. Okay, I lost my list. I don't know what my number 4 is. Okay. My number 4 is Detectorists, from which aired 2014 to 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that if you had told me I would be invested in a metal detecting club in the countryside in England,
yeah,
I would have been like, "You're insane." If you had told me that I would find Mackenzie Crooks insanely hot,
I
would be like, again, let's revisit the "you're insane" part. But Detectorists was a show that was just the perfect show for me at the time that I saw it. It was truly like just so soothing. It's pastoral. It's beautiful. It's incredibly low stakes, but it's so human in its portrayal of all these people. And this little town of Danebury is just idyllic, and I loved it so, so much.
Yeah.
And I loved it so much that I actually have not been able to go back and rewatch it, because it, again, we talked at the top of the hour about how, like, it's about how a show sort of, like, made you feel. And, like, I thought, again, the things that it did really well, like, the universal, like, humanity that this show brought, just with, like, two friends sitting on, like, a tree stump in a field.
Yeah.
Just, like, talking about their life while having tea from a flask. Like, just seemed, yeah, it was so, so great.
That show barely missed my top 10. It was, I don't know. I can't tell you why it's not on there.
Yeah,
every
time
I see it on my, runners up, I feel a pang of regret.
Yeah, it's like an old friend that you think of fondly.
And we do always point to it being kind of a soothing pastoral watch. And it is. I feel like that kind of undersells it, though. Because it really is like, it reminded me that, you know, your story can just be about humans. And if it gets at a truth, then it is compelling, even though it's just about, you know, people who are marginally employed in, you know, rural England.
It's also
still a beautiful story.
Hilariously funny.
Yes.
It's really very funny. Very funny. And it ended in a really, really satisfying, beautiful way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's about, like, I mean, the very act of, like, you know, metal detecting. It's about searching for like a connection to the past or other people or, you know, those were the lessons that I took away from Detectorist. Searching for a connection to people, not.
Well, yeah, you're right.
You can't wave your wand over that and get a beeping sound. But I just I really loved it. Yeah. And it aired, the last season aired in early 2017. A real low point for me personally would be, and it just, it was the show I needed when I needed it.
All right.
Yeah.
My number three, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one broke all the rules.
Ooh, okay.
A show that had three seasons, only one of which was marginally watchable, was True Detective. Normally wouldn't consider a show that it really dropped off after an amazing first season, but I thought that singular season was such incredible storytelling. It was funny and extremely gritty.
Yeah.
And I thought
it and menacing for
menacing like, and I mean personally for me it's iconic. Like I keep coming back to the idea of Carcosa and
time being a flat circle.
Yeah, and spoilers for True Detective season one, like the idea of searching for this evil, like the Yellow King, and it turns out that there is no Yellow King.
There's no bottom.
The evil is expansive in a way that you couldn't ever comprehend. And the thing that I keep coming, or that made it the show it was Rust, this nihilist character who I think was planning to kill himself after he solved this last mystery that he was obsessed with. Him being able to go on after realizing that Carcosa is real, essentially, made it a hopeful message at the end. And I thought that was so beautiful. And just the chemistry between McConaughey and Woody Harrelson was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen, despite being about truly the darkest of subject matters. I think it's just a perfect season of television. And I forgive it for never being able to recapture that magic, because how could you? It was incredible and nothing could ever live up to that. So, I mean, I was excited for season two and truly disappointed. And I can't blame it.
Did you enjoy season three?
No. I tried. I gave up halfway through. It was like just a light version of the first season.
Yeah, yeah. I thought season three had the acting and
It didn't have the magic.
No, I agree with you. Season one was just like this perfect alchemy of like all of it. It was the writing. It was the setting. It was the McConaissance. Yeah. It was all of it. It was, yeah, it was really, really really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. That's a good pick. Okay.
You're number three.
I don't know. This is really hard for me. Do I start switching things around now? I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go with it as I wrote it. My number three is going to be Fleabag.
Okay. I'm not surprised at all.
Two seasons. If you listened to our show last week, you heard me weep openly when trying to describe what I loved about that show. But I think it's insanely like touching and human, and like this ultra satisfying arc of seeing a character genuinely try to fix her life and like seeing the hope that, similar to True Detective, when she discovers that there's evil all around while looking at Brett Gelman's face, she decides she can still go on. I just think that show was perfect. It was perfect to me.
Yeah.
And it only had two seasons. That's all. Phoebe Waller-Bridge did not want to make more than one season, and she came back for two, and it took her 5 years to come up with something she was happy with. And I think the story's done. I think that's it. But it was just beautiful. It was like a perfect, taken as an entire body of work. If that's your legacy, that's amazing. It was really, really awesome.
Agree.
I'm a big fan.
Good call.
All right.
All right. My number two show of the decade, and this is difficult for me, but Breaking Bad, which I think
Okay.
Ran into this decade. It ended in 2013, I believe.
Breaking Bad, yeah, seasons 3 through 5 okay. aired from 2010 to 2013.
I haven't really been able to revisit Breaking Bad as much mm-hmm. as I would like to, but just before watching the movie, which I thought was unneeded, before watching the movie that just came out, El Camino, I rewatched the last 3 episodes of mm-hmm. the series, and I was just kind of blown away. I remember it was one of the best shows of all time.
Yeah.
But goddamn, it was so good.
Yeah.
It gave us so much over the course. And I think Vince Gilligan must have had it planned out.
Yeah.
Start to finish.
Oh, yeah.
The way it wrapped up, the universe it gave us, the like shocking moments, you mm-hmm. know, like Gus getting blown up and
his face melting off.
Yeah, there was, I don't know, just so, I feel like you could talk about it forever.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm going to talk about it very superficially and very briefly, but yeah, just the colors, the symbolism, and yeah, I don't know. That was probably the least eloquent summary of Breaking Bad of all time.
So my number two is also Breaking Bad.
All right.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have the same number one.
Yeah, and for all the reasons that you mentioned, I was actually delighted that it was seasons 3 through 5 that were from 2010 on mm-hmm. because the first 2 seasons, I was in and out of that show
really?
Because I was mad mm-hmm. that I'm like, just tell your fucking wife you have cancer, dude. Like, that seems infinitely easier than becoming a meth dealer. And then in season 3 is when Walter really leans into that shit mm-hmm. and embraces it. And that's when the show really took off for me. The performances were amazing. Aaron Paul.
Incredible.
I was like, I don't think he's a good actor. And then I was like, Aaron Paul's the greatest actor of our of this or any other generation. Yes. Because what he does to make that character, like the way that character is broken down as Walter White is built up is just transformative. And I mean, everybody talks about Bryan Cranston and how outstanding he is. And he is. That's not to take away from it. But Aaron Paul just did amazing work. We talked about Russian Doll last week and you talked about Sweet Birthday Baby and mm-hmm. how you sing. Literally, every time I hear the word Lydia, Landry's face flashes in my head and that creepy song, Lydia, oh, have you met Lydia, runs through my head, which is disturbing because, as you know, I follow Dylan Minnette on social media and his girlfriend's name is Lydia. So it pops into my head a lot more than it should anytime I see a picture of the two of them. But I digress.
Nah.
Doesn't take away from the genius that was Breaking Bad. And I think truly, like, all of that was amazing. The performances from everyone, mm-hmm. even Dean, what's his name, who played the...
Dean Norris. Hank.
Just, the last 3 episodes of that show are some of the most tense moments of my entire life. Like, after Ozymandias, I was like, I don't think I can stick with this show to the end. I know there's 2 episodes left, but I don't think I can do it. I can't get through it. And I think that... Yeah, all the acting and everything was amazing, but I truly do think it was down to Vince Gilligan's singular vision for that world. I think he knew all those characters. It was completely unsurprising to me when he could spin an entire other show out of that because I 100% believe that he knew Saul's backstory from the first time we see Bob Odenkirk on screen. And yeah, I think that's genius. I think, it's truly an outstanding show.
All right. Are we ready?
Should we do it? No, let's not do a song. We only have 10 minutes left.
Okay. My number
should
one?
We say it on the count of 2 on the count
do
three?
You want to?
Should we see if we have the same number one of the decade? I think we probably do, Jess. It's
okay, go ahead.
Obviously the Lifetime show Unreal. the spoof of The Bachelor. I mean, if we're being real, it's The Bachelor. But not, and Unreal was not a spoof. But okay, on the count of 3, let's say our number one, and I think we'll be breaking barriers here. 1, 2, 3. Number one show of the decade was Mad Men.
Wow, we did that great.
Flawless,
just like the show Mad Men.
Yes. And now over to our special guest, John Hamm.
thanks for being quiet this whole time, John.
Yes, Mad Men seasons 4 through 7 ran from 2010 through 2015 with insanely long breaks and breaks mid-season in between, which is how they managed to drag that shit out over 5 years.
Yeah.
What can you say? I mean, it is an iconic show.
Yeah, it was epic. And I mean, like Breaking Bad, I think Matthew Weiner's vision for the show was so expansive.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't know. Maybe it sort of evolved as it went along. But I don't know. I just don't even know what to say.
I don't either. I mean,
just pick one fucking person.
That's
Pete Campbell. That slimy motherfucker was still compelling to watch.
Ken Cosgrove. He lost an eye and it was like tractor accidents. I mean, I think Jon Hamm has never gotten his due for that role. I mean, I know he finally won something for it, but like consistently, he was just so, I'll say it again, iconic.
Yeah.
He was so, so good. I think about That's What the Money's For.
Yes.
Multiple times. Elizabeth Moss.
I don't know who he was. Some woman, like, I just saw this, like, in a meme on Tumblr. But she puts a stethoscope up to his chest and says, like, I think it's broken.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't remember what he says, but like there's a moment where she means the stethoscope, but he thinks she means his heart.
Yeah.
It's just like the idea of mixing together something that's so emotionally impactful. It's also like just a hilarious joke.
Yeah.
Like the show did that so well.
Yeah.
Like it really, like, I don't know.
Roger Sterling
Peggy roller skating.
Yes, Peggy roller skating. Peggy walking out with that cigarette and the box full of possessions.
So I think something that it did, I think it does, people didn't come around to it because it's such a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not saying people didn't come around to it. Everyone fucking loved Mad Men. But I think there's a little bit of Mad Men backlash now at the end of the decade. But I think what made moments like that, like Peggy walking out of that job with Bert's like hentai painting and a cigarette in her mouth, like the show burned slowly and earned those moments.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think there was something about the aesthetic beauty of it that like made moments like that more impactful.
Yeah.
It was just such a fucking great show.
The end of it.
The most perfect ending. Yeah. Television.
We talk about how, or we talked last week and we talked a little bit this week about how like shows that have like a search for purpose or personhood or like a deeper meaning, like versus your fate or your destiny or whatever. And like the end of Mad Men, for it to be like Draper gonna motherfucking Draper, yeah, was just like so, so good.
Yeah.
And like so, yeah, so earned and so amazing. I mean, I can see Jon Hamm's beautiful, beautiful face sitting on that, like, all in white, just sitting on that grass, just like coming up with like the most iconic, you know, commercial of the millennium. It was so, so good.
Yeah.
I mean, Joan and Peggy, like the interdynamics of that show, and also like it feels fitting to me as well to end this decade lauding a show about assholes, like, of, you know, like, it's also how much has changed and how much absolutely fucking has not, like, it's not as overt that those guys are still running the show, but those guys are absolutely running the show. Like, are you kidding me that Roger Sterling's not at the fucking super PAC for the like Republican convention, you know, like, it's just, it's so great. It's really, really great.
Yeah. The clothes.
Yes, I mean, that's the thing too, like, Dawn's visually apartment. Just like a stunning show, like, and
the sort of like Manson thing hovering over Megan when she moved to Hollywood.
Yeah, that's the thing. So we talk a lot about how like, so Russian Doll made New York look really beautiful, and Mad Men made New York look sort of prosaic and busy, and like it's very set in that world, and then there's the artsy side of it, and then like just the tones when it shifts to California, and like the light and the like, Yeah, God, it's so good.
Yeah.
So, so good.
There's so much to it.
Yeah. All right, we have 4 minutes left. Should we just quote our favorite Mad Men lines forever? She was born in a barn. Yes. She died. Yep.
She was an astronaut.
Yeah.
That made me cry. Yes. It was so beautiful. Yeah. And moments like that. Like, Bert was, you know...
A doddering old fool.
No, he wasn't. Sort of. He was a cunning, like, killer of an old man. But, yeah, just that little eulogy for his dead secretary was so beautiful.
Yeah. And Don urging Peggy, like, forget this happened. You'll be surprised, like, how easy mm-hmm. it is to forget. Or, like, you'd be surprised how much this never happened. Like, just all their relationship was so
unexpected
beautiful.
Relationships between various characters. Yeah. And who would have guessed at the start of that show that Stan would be a smoke show by the end?
Oh, right! Right! Ex-Pussy Posse members. Stan.
Still getting it.
Oh, could still get it for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. Okay, I'm glad we were on the same page with that.
I know.
Let's talk about some shows that didn't make your list.
We're going to have time for your song, right?
Run through it. It
doesn't
matter.
Most played
Nobody cares.
Song of the year. I think
don't
want to
play that
to the people.
Of the decade.
I had a hard time. I mean, I didn't, but I feel like Workaholics and Broad City brought me so much joy this decade.
I did not watch Workaholics.
Oh, my God. So both of them kind of had two strong seasons and then kind of dropped off a little bit after that. But
I felt like Broad City ended really strong. I thought the very last season and the last episode of Broad City were really deeply moving.
Yeah.
I thought like seeing these infants like move on from mm-hmm. each other and like try to forge a life.
Yeah.
Was
it was very poignant. It was a great show. It was hard not to kind of give a shout out to those on mm-hmm. my list.
Just read your list. Go through it real quick.
Party Down. Mm-hmm. I think Barry is going to go great places. It was hard not to include it. Parks and Rec was an amazing show.
Never saw it.
Are you joking?
I've never watched.
Oh, wow.
I've seen like an episode here and there.
You're missing some
I know.
Adam Scott content.
Parks and Rec was on like many, I mean, number one or two of most of the best of decade lists that I read.
Atlanta, incredible.
Yes, Atlanta is the one that I had to sub out for Girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
How appropriate that some black men got knocked out by some privileged white people.
It's just because Donald Glover's on my shit list right now because of his Andrew Yang thing, okay?
I'm not up to date on that. Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders. Mm-hmm. The Night Of. I didn't include because it was just a singular season, but what an incredible show.
Master of None.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That.
Master of None, I thought that second season was
incredible.
Beautiful. I had Love Hate on here, which I know you haven't watched. Mm-hmm. It's an Irish show that ran from 2010 to 2014 about I don't know. What am I trying to say? I don't know. It's really good. You should seek it out. It's available. If anybody wants to watch it, I have all the DVDs, except for the very last two episodes. Somehow that DVD got lost. So I gave it to somebody and they were super into it. And then they were like, how does it end? And I'm like, oh, just watch the DVD. The second DVD is gone. But you should seek out Love Hate. I had OJ Made in America on my short mm-hmm. list. I had Barry, Ozark. Mm. A show that a super sexy, super awesome show, Justified, came very close to making my
list. That was on a lot of top lists, I saw.
2010 to 2015, Timothy Olyphant has never been hotter. And
is there sex in that show?
Oh,
good. I'm going to get back to it.
Jessica, is there was there sex on TV before Timothy Olyphant having sex in Justified? It's super hot.
Oh, good.
Super hot. Like,
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. I had Togetherness on here. I really, mm-hmm. really loved the two seasons that we got of Togetherness. Better Things, the Pamela Adlon show, is really, really worth a watch. And then there's like a list of stuff that I didn't even watch. But we're out of time. I mean, Halt and Catch Fire, people love that. BoJack Horseman, Parks and Rec, Good Place, all that. Rectify is a show that
everybody loves.
But anyway, we are out of time, guys. That was a real marathon.
What a decade, y'all.
What a decade indeed. Okay, thanks you guys for being here through the half of the decade that we've been talking about TV. I hope we've given you some new stuff to watch. There's a little show called Mad Men you should check out. And we'll be back in the new year with more TV on the radio. I hope you guys all...